Milwaukee, this is for you.
Buck star Giannis Antetokounmpo, after winning the NBA's All-Star Game MVP, the Kobe Bryant MVP Award, if you will. Welcome in to the Monday edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. We've got a lot to get to, a lot of basketball to talk to, a lot of college basketball to talk to, but we have to start, of course, with last night's NBA All-Star Game, and the legend of Giannis Antetokounmpo grows.
Dodgers going to try it again. The lob this time, Giannis catches it, Tatum gets out of his way, and Giannis throws it
home. I think he pushed him up in the air even further too.
Old school big hook misses. Giannis underneath has three around him, and his shot dances in. Still perfect. Here's another three attempt for Giannis. Oh, no. Banks it home. He's still perfect on another bank three-pointer.
All right. It's his night. I mean, come on. Two bank threes.
16 for 16 from the field for Giannis.
Now it's Dame time.
Will he try the half-court winner? Dame just inside a half for the win. Yes! Team LeBron! Wins it! Dame time in Atlanta!
Play-by-play courtesy of ESPN Radio. Giannis winning the Kobe Bryant MVP award at the NBA All-Star Game in Atlanta. The legend grows for Giannis, right? I mean, playing for Team LeBron, he scores a game-high 35 points on 16 of 16 shooting. Yes, a lot of those were, how should we call, high-percentage shots, but three of them were three-pointers. Didn't go to the free-throw line once. That's typical of an All-Star game. Also typical of an All-Star game, the 171-50 final. Although, for the second straight year, the NBA using the Elam ending, I will sign up for this every day and twice on Sunday, not only for All-Star games, but it just, honestly, it makes basketball games better. And I think we saw some of that. We'll get into the Wisconsin game in a minute. And maybe it doesn't necessarily apply to that, but it applies to games that are kind of blowouty, right? Because when it turns off the clock, it forces the other team to play defense. It forces you to play until you get to that, in this case, 170 points, which is what the Elam ending is. Basically, if you're not familiar with it, and I had to describe it to someone earlier today, just give me the basic tenets of it. It's you set an arbitrary number of how many points you have to score beyond what the score is at an arbitrary time on the clock. So, and we just used round numbers. Say with 5 minutes left, that's when you turn off the clock. If the winning team has 100 points, then you would add, in this case, 24 to that, and then the first team to 124 points wins the game, irrespective of what the clock says, irrespective of anything else. And sometimes explaining it is a little bit harder than it should be, but what it makes for is a really compelling ending. And we saw it more specifically last year in 2020 at the NBA All-Star Game in Chicago, as opposed to the one on Sunday, which was more of a blowout. Again, the final score, 170 to 150. By the way, LeBron James, 4-0 as an All-Star Game general manager. He certainly has this down to a science. But I thought, by and large, condensing everything into one night, I kind of liked it. And that doesn't necessarily mean that that's going to be the way that it goes the rest of the way, because they sell a lot of tickets to NBA All-Star Saturday night, and it's more of a spectacle than the All-Star game is. The All-Star game itself, for so many years, up until maybe the last 4 or 5 years in the NBA, it was dreadful basketball to watch. And, you know, what you see in the first quarter is typical of an NBA All-Star game, which is, and I've said this for the last several years. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean this past year's All-Star Game or the All-Star Game prior to it, but the NBA All-Star Game was devolving to a point where it was far worse than the Pro Bowl. And yeah, I mean, people are like, no, the Pro Bowl is the worst sporting event you could possibly imagine. It's not. The NBA All-Star Game was dreadful to watch because there was no defense. It was up and down the floor, up and down the floor, uncontested dunks, uncontested layups, uncontested threes. It was horrible to watch. Basketball is fun when it's actual competition. And that's what we've seen in the last couple of years. And Giannis only knows one way to play. Giannis is full speed. He's on or off. That's it. He doesn't have this half speed that so many other athletes have. And that's why he scored 35 points. The 16 of 16 shooting was impressive. Now, again, defense in the NBA All-Star game isn't what it is during the regular season, or certainly what it is in the playoffs. But it's fun to see Giannis having that much fun with his peers. Now, remember, about a month ago, he was saying that he didn't want to play in the All-Star game. And, you know, LeBron James didn't want to play in the All-Star game. And so many of the NBA stars didn't want to play in the All-Star game. They didn't think that it was appropriate. But the spectacle that the NBA put on Monday night, I thought it was good. And again, when you've got that modified ending, the last 15 minutes of any basketball game turns into something that, man, you really do want to watch. Again, more specifically to the NBA All-Star game in Chicago, where it was a lot closer, but I'll take the Elam ending anytime. By the way, that NBA All-Star game, I think we said this on the podcast, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago, that was the last major sporting event I was at. I haven't been to an NBA game since late in the Bucks regular season a year ago, and the last sporting event that I think that I was at was the last Marquette home game, not, you know, a few days ago, but a year ago. So hopefully everything's getting back to normal a little bit. But again, Giannis Antetokounmpo becomes the first Milwaukee Buck ever to win the NBA All-Star MVP award. And after the game, he was asked about it by The Athletic's Eric Name.
I mean, I just think of the name Kobe Bryant on the award. I think about how much he meant to you and just kind of what this award can mean. So what does it mean to you now that you've won it?
Obviously, I'm extremely happy. And just having an award after name after Kobe Bryant in my house, it's a great feeling. I wanted to win the one last year really bad, and I didn't have the chance to win because I felt like, you know, I wanted to have that trophy in my house. And but this year I wasn't even, you know, thinking about winning it, and I was just thinking about having fun. And I had the opportunity to, you know, play well, and my team has played great, and I was able to win it. And just having, you know, as I said, the trophy after Kobe Bryant, it's amazing. And I know he would be happy, and I know he'd be happy.
I'm curious, we got to watch you walk in and you have that gold chain on with the pendant of your dad. You see Liam at the end and kind of wave to him. It just feels like you're playing with so much joy and you're trying to stay in the moment this season. Just what does all of that kind of mean to, you know, have your dad on your neck and have like Liam there for you for this moment?
You know, it's a great feeling. Having Liam come watch me play in his first All-Star game, being able to play good, it's amazing. But at the end of the day, you know, I just want Liam to see somebody that's having fun, somebody that's, you know, plays with joy, you know, enjoy what he does. And I really do not care about the outcome, but that's what I want him to see. That's what I want him to grow into, you know. And always about the chain. And it's always wherever I go, I always have my dad. You know, he was in my first All-Star game, but he's always with me. You know, in the four All-Star games after that, he's always with me. And I always try to represent him and his games.
Jim Mozarski.
Giannis, congratulations. I know you've been working on a lot of parts of your game. You made the joke about the bank being open extended hours, but what did it mean, I guess, that the highlights are of walk-up threes, a step-back three for you tonight?
Hey, man, I'm trying to do this back home too, but, like, you know, they're not letting me, you know, so you guys got to put the word in and tell them to shoot more threes. No, I'm joking, but I was just having fun. You know, and sometimes when you're just having fun, you're not thinking about the outcome. It just happens. Like, you know, I just let my instinct take over. And obviously, I've been working on it a lot over the summer, but I haven't used it as much in the season. But it's something that I feel like I can do. And today was like a game that did not count. And I was like, okay, I'll try it. it worked out.
A few minutes of Giannis Antetokounmpo from his Zoom call. I know the audio was a little bit difficult there for a couple of minutes of it, but from the NBA All-Star game in Atlanta, Giannis holding the trophy in his lap, taking some questions from some reporters. The Bucks, by the way, they get back to action Thursday night at home against the New York Knicks. Moving on to college basketball, Wisconsin Badgers coach Greg Gard fuming after yesterday's 77-73 loss in their regular season finale at Iowa. Not mad at the loss per se, but rather the flagrant foul called on Brad Davison. I've covered Wisconsin basketball for a long time, going back to Stan Van Gundy and Stu Jackson and Dick Bennett and Bo Ryan, and Bo Ryan was a fiery guy. He was, especially working the referees on the sidelines. He had that acerbic wit in the press conferences after games. But I've never seen a Wisconsin basketball coach light up the referees in a post-game presser than Greg Gard did after Sunday's game at Iowa.
All right, thanks, Patrick. Obviously, I thought we did a lot of good things today. And obviously the end result, obviously we're not happy with, but I thought we took some steps forward. A lot of areas we can continue to clean up and improve upon too. But, you know, the area that I really want to address beginning, maybe get people have questions about it, is the mockery that has now been made of the hook and hold or any type of thing. And it appears to have become a Brad Davison rule where it's become, quite frankly, a joke. Anytime there's a foul or a question, the opponents are yelling to the officials about the monitor, to go to the monitor. I saw the play. If college basketball is headed in this direction, we're in big trouble. It sickens me that we have games decided like this, and this is where it's at. That rule was not put in place for that. That was for safety of players. That was for post-play. Those type of things happen on every single possession of the game, specifically in the post. So I think it's really turned into a joke. I feel bad for Brad Davison. The kid's a great kid, plays his ass off, but he continues to get screwed by this and how the officials and the league and opponents have continued to just call that out and put a spotlight on that and deaden the ball. And it's become sickening, really. It's made a mockery of college basketball, specifically in the positions we've been in. That questions?
We'll start with Jim Polzin.
I was going to actually ask you about the fifth foul on Trice. If you saw that live or on video since the game ended, if you thought that was a good call.
I haven't seen that one, Jim. Did you see it in a replay?
Saw a replay.
What did you think?
No one cares about what I think. What did you think?
I didn't. I saw it live, but I got blocked too. But I have not seen that replay. Obviously, like I said, I think this is, and this isn't the first time. This has been 3 years of this stuff with Brad, where it's constantly, it's not just, it's unfortunately it's been, that's been pinned on him. And now it becomes a weapon, and the officials have allowed it become a weapon for an opponent. I have not seen the replay of the Trice foul, so I don't have it. I'll be able to watch it on the bus on the way home. And I thought, I won't say what I thought.
Jeff Patricus.
Well, Greg, I know you've commented on your thoughts, but can you at least explain to us what the explanation was on that play where he's on the hook and hold? Trying to catch the pass.
Yeah, he's trying to catch the pass, and actually Murray's arm has his arm. Murray's arm is in an L. Brad's arm is straight. He has to try to catch it with one hand. Neither Murray doesn't fall down. Nobody's in danger of getting hurt. Like I said, it's become something that anybody can call out on. They can go to, they request the monitor. And like I said, I don't know if they keep track of monitor requests, but if Brad Davison doesn't lead the country in it. And like I said, that's why it's become a mockery, because it's constantly this. And like I said, in this position, that rule, that should not decide basketball games when it's that type of play.
Josh Schaefer.
Greg, with all the reviews, is it hard at the end of the game there to kind of keep the momentum going? It seemed like the game itself was going back and forth kind of up until about 2 minutes left. And then that 2 minutes took a long time. And it seemed like it kind of threw off maybe what you guys might have had going offensively, even what Iowa had going offensively. It seemed like you just kind of halted everything.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to the monitor all the time. I mean, it's It's just, like I said, it's just need to call the game as it happens. And said, so we're going to the monitor for everything. It's just like a, you have a pocket full of monitor requests anymore. And an endless pocket full of monitor requests. It's like you can request it on every single time and free shooters and do anything with it. So it's just, that's something that's got to be addressed because it's gotten out of hand.
Follow from Jim Polzine.
Do you feel a little bit like you did at Purdue where you walked off the court, you said that day, feeling like you had played a pretty good game, but it didn't translate into a victory? I mean, is it a similar feeling today, would you say?
I don't feel that way, right? I mean, played better, but we're still obviously the result. We're all competitors. It's a upset locker room. They've given us great effort. They've given us great focus. You know, they've done what we've asked. We haven't been perfect, but they battled and they've played better basketball here. I'd like to see them get rewarded for it, but we've got to continue to do things for longer stretches better and more consistently and clean up some of the mistakes that we make at times that cost us, specifically against these teams that are playing at a high level or are high level teams.
Follow from Jeff Patricus.
Kind of along those lines, Greg. I mean, I know we've talked about the officiating, but it's a tie game when they miss the second of two free throws and you give up an offensive rebound, which yep. started the sequence, which led to Trice's fall. Is that something you just cannot allow to happen?
That's the little things. That's the little things that it's the unnecessary fouls, you know, 25, 30 feet from the basket that we don't need. There's going to be physical contact. There's going to be those type of fouls, the bang, bang fouls, but the unnecessary ones, and those type of, you know, you got to make that play. And, you know, those rebounds, we had another one where there was a lob to the post that we needed to come up with the ball and we didn't come up with the ball. So that's the difference in terms of having a, you know, a happier locker room than we have right now.
Jeff Patricus.
Yeah, Greg, I assume you're anticipating you're going to hear something from the league today. Do you care about that? And are you worried at all about how games might be officiated in the Big Ten tournament because of what you said?
Well, I'm just trying to protect a player that is constantly, they've put a spotlight on him and I've asked the league to stop it. And they've allowed it to get out of hand. And the character of the kid now with what ESPN did with their Wikipedia thing during one of the games that we had, and if it was Michigan or was it, I mean, that and ESPN can issue all the apologies they want. The kid's a great kid. He's done a phenomenal job for our program. He's been a great representative of this university. And I'm just tired of him constantly getting put in that light. And it's got to stop. So I'll be on the phone. I'll be happy to take a call from the league. They know my number. They know where I'm at. But this has gotten, like I said, this has gotten ridiculous where we've gotten TV now, you know, putting up stuff on Wikipedia with a false Wikipedia page. And I got apologies from ESPN. I got apologies from Bob Wischusen and Dick Vitale and the producer and all that. That's great. But they continue to take shots at the kid. And that's where enough's enough. I'm tired of it. I'm going to call it out when it happens, and I'm calling it out today.
Good for him. Good for Greg Gard. Good for him for sticking up for his players. And look, Brad Davison plays aggressively, and he's kind of a gym rat, and he's one of those guys that I think got to where he is right now by being the first one in the gym and the last one out of it. Probably got up at 4:30 every morning when he was in grade school and then middle school and then high school. Somehow got the keys to the gym when he was on the varsity and just shot basketball after basketball. And that's how guys succeed, not necessarily in the NBA. And I don't know what Brad Davison's career is going to look like after he leaves Madison. I suspect that he'll probably get a job playing somewhere in Europe. I don't think he's an NBA player, but he's a gym rat. And he's a guy that gets the most out of what God gave him. And there's some guys that are just, you know, physically gifted. LeBron James, you always knew, was physically gifted. Now, when he put the mental acuity that he has gained over the course of his life into the physical gifts that he was given when he was born, you put that together and you've got one of the greatest players that ever walked the planet. Same thing with Giannis Antetokounmpo. Same thing with Michael Jordan. They've got this, not only killer instinct, but also the physical gifts that go along with it. Well, Brad Davison doesn't necessarily have those physical gifts, so he's got to make up for it somewhere, and he makes up for it with hustle, and sometimes that irks the other team. But it's completely unacceptable for those other teams to go to the officials and complain about, in this case, Brad Davison, saying, well, he's a dirty player, so you should call his game differently than everyone else. And that's what's been going on for the last several years in Madison, and Greg Gard finally has had enough of it. And, you know, he talked about how he's gotten apologies from ESPN, and that's all well and good. But why is that narrative out there in the first place? It's because somebody bitched about it too many times. And I'm tired of it, and I can only imagine what his coach feels about it. And finally, Greg Gard came out and spoke out against it. But I never heard any of that from any other – look, I mean, you run through the gamut of coaches that have coached not only at Wisconsin, but anywhere else as well here in the state of Wisconsin. I never heard from it, like as I was talking about before. I never heard that from Bo Ryan. I thought I might have heard that from Bo Ryan because, he was a fiery guy. Dick Bennett was not a fiery guy. Stu Jackson was not a fiery guy. Stan Van Gundy, not a fiery guy. You can go to Marquette basketball coaches. You might have heard that maybe from Mike Dean way back in the day. Maybe Kevin O'Neill. But, you know, Steve Wojciechowski's not going to call out the referees like Greg Gard did. I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. And it was high time in coming. It was long overdue. And I'm glad that there was finally a snapping point for Greg Gard, because it is nonsense the way that Brad Davison has been targeted by the officials during the course of his career at the University of Wisconsin. By the way, the Wisconsin Badgers, they will next play in the Big Ten tournament against the winner of the Penn State-Nebraska game. That game between the Nittany Lions and the Cornhuskers, that'll be on Wednesday. So the Badgers play Thursday night in Indianapolis, Bankers Life Fieldhouse, right around 8 o'clock. This is one of my favorite weeks of the year, by the way. The conference tournaments, now the Big Ten has kind of moved around all over the place. I think they've settled on either Chicago or Indianapolis. It's supposed to be in Chicago this year, but because of the pandemic, things have gone all cattywampus on everything. As I mentioned earlier in the show, I haven't been to a sporting event in a year now. So I'm anxious to get back out, but again, safety comes first. Everybody understands that. And I'm just looking forward to the Big Ten tournament, one of my favorite events every year. When it's in Chicago, it's just so easy to pop on down for the day. You go out, you take a Friday off, or you go in for the Saturday-Sunday sessions, and you can see the championship game. But that Friday, you've got, what, five games that you can watch? I mean, you've got basketballs bouncing in your head, and you settle in for a long day of hoops, and nothing beats it. It's, again, this is one of my favorite weeks of the year. Speaking of college basketball, the Marquette Golden Eagles, they will play Georgetown Wednesday afternoon at 2 o'clock in the first round of the Big East Conference Tournament. The Golden Eagles ended their regular season strong, winning four out of their last five games. They finished their regular season at 13-13 overall, 8-11 in conference play. Joining us here on the Doug Russell podcast, he covers the Marquette Golden Eagles for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He's been on the show before. So happy to welcome in Ben Steele to the Doug Russell podcast. Ben, I appreciate the time. How you doing today?
Good, Doug. Thanks for having me on. We made it.
We did make it. We did make it to March. And, you know, you and I were chatting before I hit the record button, and you and I were just kind of talking about the weirdness that was trying to cover this team. I guess really any team, but, you know, as a beat writer, you get certain access points that maybe someone that covers all sports may not get, whether it's, you know, FaceTime with the coach or some of the players that you get to know. But you didn't get to do any of that in the last 12 months. How have the last 12 months as a beat writer for a major team, how has that gone for you?
Yeah, it's been tough. The best parts about my job are just talking to people face to face, getting to know people, you know, getting people to trust you, getting people to tell you things. And it's hard to do that when all that is over the computer and through Zoom interviews. You know, nobody likes talking through a computer, you know, especially after tough losses. Like Marquette's had a lot of those this year. So it just hasn't been a good year as far as just interactions. It's just been hard, man. It just feels like I haven't had that personal connection to this year's team that I had in years past. Just don't have a feel for the interactions between the players or interactions between the coaching staff and players. That stuff that you see while you're watching a game that you don't see when you're watching it on TV, that the TV cameras don't capture, you know?
Yeah, the last couple of games you were able to see in person with different, I mean, it's the same result for the Golden Eagles, but a different atmosphere for both. No one was at Wintrust Arena for the DePaul game last week, Tuesday. And then finally, the City of Milwaukee Health Department allowed 10% capacity at Fiserv Forum for the season, or regular season finale against Xavier on Saturday. Those last two games, how much different do you think the reaction to the players, the reaction from the fans to the players were, as opposed to playing in an empty gym, which is what you saw last week, Tuesday?
Yeah, it was a little bit of normalcy yesterday at Fiserv Forum. 1,800 fans were allowed in. That's the 10% capacity that you mentioned. And it was senior night, so Marquette honored, you know, it's three seniors that were on the court this season, Theo John, Kobe McEwen, and Jamal Kane. Senior nights are always filled with emotion, and it was good to see the interaction between the crowd, get them to show their appreciation to those guys who played the last 4 years. Jamal Kane and Theo played 4 years. Kobe McEwen played 2 years for Marquette after transferring. But it was good to see the energy there. I definitely felt, you mentioned I was at Wintrust Arena for the DePaul game before. There was just no energy in that game with no fans. And, you know, Fiserv has the DJ Snack Daddy for Marquette games, and he was pumping music at Fiserv Forum that upped the energy there, that they didn't have that in DePaul. It was just a kind of a very stale atmosphere. Talked to Jamal Kane via Zoom after the game, and he said the players definitely felt it, and he said it definitely helped them play with a different kind of edge because they had a little bit more of that emotional energy that they could play with.
Let's talk about this season as a whole, because the last 2 years, Marquette really stumbled into the postseason. And, you know, 2 years ago, they got to the NCAA tournament and Ja Morant just blew them out the door, you know, in that first round game. And then last year, they didn't even get there, obviously, because of the pandemic and everything was canceled. But this year, it was kind of the opposite. They stumbled mightily throughout the entire season as well. I mean, I'm going back to that Seton Hall game on Valentine's Day, and I thought that this was a team that very well could have just folded up and went away. And then lo and behold, they finished strong. They win four out of their last five. What kicked into gear? What turned it around after that game at Seton Hall?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is they moved Greg Elliott into the starting lineup, and that's kind of really juiced them. One, because Greg has just shot the lights out the last four or five games for them. And that's really kind of opened up space for their offense to operate. Marquette just hasn't been a very good three-point shooting team this year as they had in the years past, you know, with Marcus Howard and Andrew Rousey before that. They've always been a three-point shooting team the last 5 or 6 years under Steve Wojciechowski. But this year, it played a little different. And they really rely on getting inside, whether that's Theo John post-ups or DJ Carton drives, but it can also get pretty clogged up around the basket in the lane. So with Greg Elliott shooting much better these last 4 or 5 games, kind of opened up those driving lanes. It's really kickstarted their offense. And it's also, they moved either Kobe McEwen or Jamal Kane off the bench. And that's where didn't have a lot of depth this year, and getting production off the bench has been a problem throughout the years, but the first part of the season. But the last 4 or 5 games, getting Kobe McEwen and Jamal Kane off the bench has kind of also given them a little boost, more production off the bench. And one of their freshmen, Justin Lewis, also missed 6 games. He sat 6 games with an ankle injury. He's been back the last 3 games, and he's actually getting better. But he was a key player for them early in the season. So getting him back was also added to juicing up that production from the bench. So it's been a bunch of things. Defense actually has played a lot better, especially yesterday, I thought. In the first half against Xavier, might have been the best their defense has looked all year, which is promising heading into the Big East tournament next week.
We talked about how weird it was for you to cover the team during the pandemic, but from a player's perspective, I mean, this is a team, and it's not just Marquette. I mean, teams all over the country have had stops and starts and games postponed and games picked up, you know, 4 days before it was scheduled, specifically the North Carolina game. But the latter part of this season, you look at the way that because of some of the postponements, it all kind of shook out at Villanova, at Seton Hall, at Butler, at North Carolina, at UConn, at DePaul. I mean, that's what, five or six road games in a row. That's six road games in a row. That's unheard of in college basketball.
Yeah, I mean, that's the college basketball teams that play six straight road games. Those are usually the low major teams that are looking for, you know, a paycheck early in the season that'll just go play whoever for some money. But yeah, for a high major team, six games on the road, especially late in February, is just, it's just crazy. So I know that was draining for them too. But yeah, getting back to Pfizer was key for that last game of the season. But now they're going back on the road again, out to Madison Square Garden for the Big East tournament.
Well, they've got Georgetown coming up in the first round at Madison Square Garden. The last time that these two teams were supposed to play was back on January 20th. It didn't happen. The one time that they did play, Marquette was able to win 64-60 back on January 2nd, the day after New Year's. That was a game that was on the road in Washington, D.C. How do Marquette and Georgetown, how do they mesh up? And what can they glean, in your opinion, from that game that was so long ago? I mean, it was at the beginning of the Big East season, practically. What can they glean from that win to take it into Wednesday's contest?
Yeah, it's hard to say because Georgetown was really struggling back then. They've actually played pretty well down the stretch of Big East play. They got a lot of size. The Hoyas have a lot of size. They got a couple 7-foot guys. That's where they kind of have an advantage against Marquette. Like I said, Marquette likes to play in through the paint on drives and post-ups, so big guys can kind of disrupt that. The last game, Marquette kind of struggled in the first half against Georgetown. I think they only had 20 points in the first half in that one, and then they kind of had an 18-point rally to win. But Georgetown, it's going to be a tough game for Marquette. They've had some good wins. They beat Creighton on the road, and they beat Seton Hall. They're a good team. Patrick Ewing's kind of, I know he's had some issues there. They haven't made the NCAA tournament under Patrick Ewing, but it seems like he's got the program going in the right direction. Definitely has the big guys that I mentioned that he teaches so well, being the former big guy himself.
You mentioned the three seniors that Marquette is losing, Jamal Cain, Kobe McEwen, and Theo John. As far as who's coming up next, I know that Cameron Jones is committed, Stevie Mitchell, some others as well. When you look at the recruiting class that Steve Wojciechowski has coming in, I mean, we've talked about it before, and maybe I'll get your thoughts on the coaching situation long term in a few minutes, but I mean, this is still a coach in Steve Wojciechowski that has yet to win an NCAA tournament game. He's only been there twice. They've been bounced in the first round both times. This is an important class for him. What do you know about the players that are coming in?
Yeah, this definitely next year is going to be huge for Steve Wojciechowski, especially if the players that they expect to return next season from this year's team, DJ Carton, sophomore this year, and the two really good freshmen, Dawson Garcia and Justin Lewis, if they all return, I mean, that's three really good returning players. And the freshmen coming in, yeah, the two guards you mentioned, Stevie Mitchell and Cam Jones, are kind of really good combo kind of scoring guards that we've seen out of Marquette in recent years. They also have a center who's committed, hasn't signed yet because he committed after the fall signing day, so he can't sign until the spring. But his name's Jonas Adu. He's 7 feet tall, really mobile. You mentioned all the weirdness of this year. It's been a weird recruiting year, too, because coaches haven't been out on the road. They haven't seen any of these guys in person. You know, it's all done over Zoom. They didn't have an AAU season last year. So it's been weird, but they got the 7-footer, Jonas Adu. He seems like, as much as a 7-footer can be, under the radar, kind of overlooked, and he's kind of improved in the last year. I think he's up to, you know, a top 30 recruit right now. When he committed to Marquette, he was, you know, hovering around the 100 range. So he's kind of picking up steam as far as his reputation is. So he could be a really key player, especially Theo John's not coming back next year. So Marquette's going to need that kind of rim protector. And adding the 7-foot mobile guy really should help Marquette a lot next year. I know he'll be a freshman, so we'll see how he adjusts and all that. But yeah, this is going to be a key season next year for sure, on a lot of levels.
It seems as though we've said that a couple of times over the last couple of years. Maybe it's difficult to get a sense of this because of the pandemic, but, you know, I spoke with Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News and the Big Ten Network before the season began, and I asked him if reprieve was the right word, not specifically for Steve Wojciechowski, but for a number of coaches around the country that the pandemic kind of gave them a reprieve because nobody wants to pay out the buyouts because, of course, that, you know, revenues are down sharply all over college basketball, all over college sports, because, you know, there's no fans in the stands, and that's how they derive so much of their revenue. But what is the sense that you get as someone who's been as close to this program for as long as you have been? How hot is that seat under Steve Wojciechowski as we sit here today?
Yeah, it's a fair question to ask. Yeah, the financial picture that you mentioned is definitely a factor into it. He signed through the 2024 season, 2023-24 season. So he's got a couple years left on his contract. So, yeah, finances come into play there. Yeah, and I think just the craziness of this year, I think – at least buys them next year, just because of everything that they've had to deal with, just as far as testing and getting players ready and not having a full off season last season to get the new faces ready to play this year, and just everything that they've had to deal with. But yeah, I mean, frustrations for sure. I hear from Marquette fans every day about frustrations about how they haven't won an NCAA tournament game under Steve Wojciechowski. And I mean, that's understandable. I mean, fans want their teams to win, especially college basketball. The most important part of the job is winning in March, you know? And so that's why I said, you know, next year is going to definitely be very important for Coach Wojciechowski.
Everybody was behaved at Fiserv Forum the other night, right?
Seemed like it, yeah. It seemed like it. And the workers there at Fiserv were pretty diligent about walking through the crowd and making sure everyone was taking care of their business mask-wise. And it seemed like everyone was spaced out, of course. So, yeah, it seemed like everything was under control.
What were the protocols that you had to go through? Did you have to get a test or anything before you walked into the arena?
No, it's just a temperature check when I walked in at the security desk. No, that was it. No COVID test, or I didn't fill out a health screening or anything, or a questionnaire or anything. Just a temperature check.
Very good. Well, like I said, hopefully this thing is behind us sooner rather than later. Ben Steele from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Read his outstanding stuff in the Journal Sentinel on the Marquette Golden Eagles beat. Ben, I appreciate the time and the insight so much. Thanks for joining me on the podcast.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Ben. There he goes. Ben Steele joining us here from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Support local journalism. You can catch Ben's outstanding writing, of course, at JS Online or in the newspaper itself, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. All right. Wanted to leave you with this. This is one of those things that I kind of forgot about last week, but Tom Brady was on the Late Late Show with James Corden, and James wanted to know about that celebration parade that Tom Brady kind of infamously chucked a trophy between boats and then stumbled off of a boat. How did that all go down? Here's the GOAT, Tom Brady, on with James Corden on CBS.
It was an amazing thing to watch, as was, I have to say, the boat parade was equally as fantastic to watch. You got a little daring
quite as well
with the Lombardi trophy. If you don't remember it, take a look. I mean, I know the outcome and my heart's still in my mouth when I see it. Was there any bit of you thinking, what do I do if this goes in the water?
Okay, first of all, I was not thinking at that moment. There was not a thought. It was, this seems like really fun to do. And not to mention, when you get your hands on one of those trophies, there are a lot of really sharp edges on the bottom, you know, yeah, where the stand is. Obviously, the ball is what it is. But, and then I found out later that had that been an incomplete pass, that would have went down like 80 feet.
Oh, you're never seeing it again.
So
you even
I'm
hear,
so happy to Cam.
Whose voice is it that you hear say, no? Can you, there's somebody shouts, no, don't do it.
That's my little 8-year-old daughter. The daddy,
oh,
no.
Oh, no.
And who could imagine that an 8-year-old girl would have the most sense of anybody in that whole area at the time? Like, you know, she's the voice of reason. I mean, go figure.
I
so
gotta
it
say,
was really cute.
It was so brilliant seeing you having such a great time. This is you getting off the boat. Now, what is this? Is this sea legs? Or dare I say it, a touch of tequila?
Oh man, I think a little of both, It's it was definitely a moment of celebration. I'm happy I'm on land at that point. Absolutely happy I'm being surrounded by my fellow quarterback Griff in the right place at the right time. Who could have a friend better than that? Making sure I was just so comfortable walking off the boat like that.
We all need that friend. And I got to say, I think that to me, seeing those clips, seeing that stuff, it sums up what that team kind of, I think, represented to lots of football fans over the year. Just you looked like you were so together and you were enjoying it. And it looks like a team that anyone would want to be a part of.
Tom Brady on the Late Late Show with James Corden. All right, that'll about do it for this edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. My thanks to Ben Steele from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel on the Marquette beat. Again, the Marquette Golden Eagles, they play their first conference tournament game, the Big East Conference Tournament. That'll be Wednesday afternoon at 2 o'clock. The Golden Eagles, again, finishing up strong, winning 4 out of their last 5. You cannot say the same thing about the Wisconsin Badgers. But nevertheless, the Badgers had a better season overall than Marquette. They're likely headed to the Big Dance, but they lost 4 out of their last 5 going into the Big Ten Tournament. Fortunately for them, they've got Penn State or Nebraska coming up on Thursday night. Hopefully that will give them at least a bit of a boost that they'll need to go into the Big Dance, which, again, starts in a week. Selection Sunday is this coming Sunday. So, unless the Milwaukee Panthers wind up winning out, which probably isn't going to happen, they've got their semifinal game coming up as I tape this in a few hours. I guess we'll know whether or not they get the automatic bid from the Horizon League sooner rather than later, but it could end tonight for the Panthers as well, for Patrick Baldwin. But you know what? That team this year, they've had a lot to go through in 2020 and 2021. They didn't have a very good regular season, but those first two games, that's what say, why they say, in March, anything can happen. And with all of these conference tournaments and the automatic bids that come with them, every team has a chance. If you can get into your conference tournament, if it's one of those conferences that takes everybody, like the Horizon League, you have a chance to win a national championship. Not likely, but you still have an opportunity. You control your own fate. All you have to do is win every game in front of you. So that may or may not happen for the Milwaukee Panthers. It's not very likely to. But just winning their first two games in the Horizon League tournament, I think that that's something that should be celebrated and something that they can hopefully springboard off of for the upcoming season, the 2021-22 basketball season as well. All right, again, that'll do it for this edition of the podcast. We'll be back on Wednesday with an Anything Goes edition of the show. Have a great week. We'll talk to you soon right here on the Doug Russell Podcast.